is... Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Eta, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week! Hashtag Politics with Fresh and Botsang. Another SONA in the bag. The NPA is reversing decisions. Another Madlanga witness dead. Cat Matlala's testimony under scrutiny, and South Africa officially exits MONUSCO. Is all of this decisive leadership or a system under pressure? Botsang will put all of that in context. Welcome to Wow What a Week, hashtag Politrix.
Good morning, Fresh,
and to
the followers, brother men, and the viewers.
Yes, sir.
It has been a very hectic week, both domestically and internationally. But I had a very relaxed one.
So because I'm traveling to Lesotho, we're recording this before the SONA.
Yes.
And we're going to ask you to predict what you think the SONA is going to be.
Yeah.
And then we'll look next week as to whether your predictions were spot on or not.
Yeah. Anyway, Fresh, I don't expect much. The State of the Nation address has been, you know, a common factor in South African politics after 1994. But where I have a problem, it's where the head of state, because it is a platform where the head of state is supposed to, it's like a report card, you know, back to us as a nation.
Yes.
Where are we? That's why it's in the State of the Nation. Where are we as a state? What position are we occupying? Have we achieved what he had promised last year? If we did not, what were the challenges? Where did we fail? And what are the projections for the following year, the current year that we are in, calendar year?
In fact, some of the promises from last year included national dialogue, local government reform, digital services, My Mzansi platform and Home Affairs digital initiatives, aiming to streamline public access, infrastructure, R1 trillion was allocated for that, SOE reform and economic transformation, draft 20 billion rand transformation fund, and triple BEE amendments to support black-owned and small businesses. These are some of the SONA 2025 promises. Yes,
you know, taking the last three, the 20 trillion rand fund for infrastructure, there has been a very, very good infrastructure development in the country. There's been movements, whether it was roads, whether it's infrastructure at ports, improvement at ports. I mean, I was listening to the Minister of Transport talking about how the containers at the port of Durban, for example, and port of Cape Town, they've installed machinery or whatever.
Scanners
that could actually scan and even load containers moving from 70 kilometers per hour up to 90 kilometers per hour. So that's a very, you know, big improvement. We have seen improvement on national roads and infrastructure coming up. And then we look at the economy, the money and investment in the economy. It may not be tangible to the ears and eyes and hands of a common and layman South African, but the South African economy has said to have grown with approximately 1.5%, you know, and the target being 3%. And so it is on the right track. The inflation rate has stabilized as well. We've seen the rent in the last few months improving for various reasons, not because of our economy is performing well, but for various reasons, we've seen the rent stabilizing and improving against major foreign currencies, especially the dollar, despite our challenges with the USA. And also on a positive aspect, we've been removed from the grey listing by the European, rating agencies.
Yes.
South Africa has been moved out of that. So those are some of the positive and the highlights, but mostly it's not because of only the doing of the government. It's the universe, you know, converging and conspiring with South Africa. But on tangible issues, like when you look at issues of security, issues of handling the SOE specifically and reforming them, and issues of improving on government spending and all that, we have not improved on that. The GNU is going to have a problem in cutting government spending because the government has increased the number of ministers and ministries and all those things. So they're going to have difficulty in that. But I think the biggest problem that President Ramaphosa and the GNU are faced with, it's still corruption. There's still a whole lot of corruption, because for one simple reason, Fresh, you can't take the people who have been accused or alleged to be corrupt in corrupt activities and you move them within government, whether you move them to diplomatic circles, whether you move them to local government or to another ministry or another department. You are just recycling the same people that are alleged to be involved in corrupt activities, and you expect corruption to disappear. but also except recently in the recent weeks. And due to the Madlanga Commission's formation, the kind of directive they received and the outcomes there, we have started seeing movement on charges, suspensions, prosecution of some of the people who are allegedly involved in corruption via the Madlanga Commission. But that's just one element of corrupt activities in the country. There's many others that are not linked to the police and criminal justice system. There's a lot of financial corruption that is happening in the country. There's a whole lot of misappropriation of state funds, and we don't see those cases ending up in courts. But, you know, we are back at Tintswalo with the president, and Tintswalo is growing, and the situation is, in my eyes, it's getting worse. You look at, people are saying we don't have, load shedding, electricity load shedding. We have load reduction. There are areas in this country that people spend days, some weeks without electricity. And for me, I wouldn't clap hands to say we have handled load shedding. The only difference between the load reduction that we're experiencing now and load shedding, that load shedding was scheduled. You knew that you will not have electricity at a certain time on certain days. You know, there was a schedule. This one, it's abrupt. There's no schedule and there's no reliability. And it's not only the load reduction because of the pressure on electricity and the supply of electricity. It's also involved with criminal activities. Thefts of cables, theft of inverters or whatever the state is losing towards criminals. But then, boom, in the middle of all this, I wonder if the president would have taken a bath before going to address a sauna. When you look at the water situation, the whole country.
Yeah, but maybe we'll to a hotel like Banyaza.
That's another story. The premier of Gauteng saying when they are having water challenges like any other human being, He goes to a hotel to can take a bath in order to perform his duties. He apologized for that after, but I think it had a bad taste in it. What do you say about people who can afford to go to the hotel or those who can even afford to rent a room for an hour, but you must travel to that particular hotel?
Don't you sometimes have a sense that as much as politicians may say things that are unfortunate and later apologize, what they said the first time they meant? So whether it's someone saying to President Ramaphosa, I'm struggling, Gaspani. For me, that's low-hanging fruit.
Yes.
So he had an opportunity to say, Ngai CV, kitla o shebela.
Yeah.
Even if he didn't mean it.
Yes.
But instead he said, you must try hard.
You must try hard, yeah.
You must look harder. Or minister saying people are lazy or they must look for jobs. That often it's exactly what you feel that you say the first time. Exactly. Unfortunately, maybe because you didn't have perception training or foot-in-mouth training, you end up saying exactly what you feel.
Well, that's unfortunate, Fresh, but the other element is, you know, I've always said politicians must stay away from cameras. They must leave technical work. Like I didn't see the need for the premier of Gauteng to can address the media about the technical challenges we're experiencing with water problems. Let water experts and technicians and people who work on wherever there's a hole and loss of water come and address us. Then we can ask relevant questions to experts. But to want to talk to everything that you are not an expert on, it becomes a challenge, especially when you are not a public speaker. But again, you know, going back to the sauna, I think there are a few things that I think President Ramaphosa would shine on. One is the collection of revenue by SARS.
Yes.
Him appointing Mr. Kiers Vetter a few years back. His term is coming to an end, actually. He must replace him. And I think he had performed well in collecting revenue as well as stabilizing SARS. I think that's one thing he's going to shine on. The second thing is the G20 that South Africa hosted successfully amid challenges created by the likes of United States of America. And again, Fresh, me and you, you know, a few months back, we spoke about how South Africa shines in the international forums and hosting them. And when the G20 was here, there was water, there was no load shedding or whatever, load reduction and all that in order to please and or satisfy the guests. And as soon as they left, we are back to square one. The streets are filthy. The promises that were in the cleaner Joburg that we saw during that week, it's back to normal. And yet, the government had promised us that what is happening in the city of Joburg, they will maintain it beyond the G20. Go to Joburg now. Sure. You know, I was in Joburg last week on Thursday, and it's back to square one. And so the maintenance of the promises. But you look at the challenge of security in the country. People still feel unsafe. There's still a lot of violence, robberies, and all those things happening in the country. I think that's a major issue. If we can't take care of our own security, I think the president should be focusing on such and issues of admission of kids at schools every year, year in, year out, grade one and grade sevens. We are already in February. Trust me, there are still parents who are still struggling to this day.
Sure.
To place their children at public schools. And look, there's various improvements that we can pat ourselves on the shoulders. Like when you look at what the Border Management Authority and Home Affairs are doing, the digitization by Home Affairs, that promise has been achieved. It's not, you know, that's one of the cheeks we may say.
Home Affairs. And I suspect the DA will take credit for their minister implementing it.
What President Ramaphosa, I predict, is going to do in order not to rattle the DA for their claims and their ministers is to say this is what the Government of National Unity has achieved.
Yes.
To go and portray a situation that, you see, when we are united and we work together, we can achieve more as a nation. But I've said it at the beginning of the GNU to say, even ANC ministers are going to start improving performance because now they've got a watchdog. They are going to compete with their counterparts from DA, Patriotic Alliance, the PAC and others, and Inkatha Freedom Party. So there is competition and they will want to be seen to be performing. But generally, as Botsang, I'm anti the State of the Nation address. Not because of the 7 million they spend. They've cut it from 20, 30 million before. The 7 million, when you look at the activities there, it's not a lot of money, you know, to fly everybody there, bookings and hotels. It's not a lot of money for a nation to spend 7 million rents on a State of the Nation address. But the glitz and the glamour, the red carpet, the shining, the dinners, when just walking distance, a few hundred meters away from there, you find the Google to the Khayalichas and the Langas, and people are still living in poverty and squalor. And you also look at the Cape Flats where there's violence and you know, things like that. I don't think we should be celebrating at the face of the people of the Western Cape, especially the townships and the impoverished areas. And somebody may say, we cannot have the party because the neighbors or other kids are poor. But this is a nation. This is a State of the Nation address, not the state of political parties address in parliament. I personally believe that the president can just have scorecards and annual report to inform the nation, whether without glitz and glamour.
Okay, so what, like have almost like a family meeting?
Yes, address us and tell us what is the state at the moment. Having have collected information from various ministries or departments. But again, parliament last year ruled and took a decision that they need a portfolio committee in parliament to oversee the presidency. Remember, at the presidency, there are ministries. And we don't have a portfolio committee that oversees those ministries. Somebody may argue that state security falls under the security cluster, and therefore that portfolio committee will oversee that. But the state security, there's that women, Ministry of Women Affairs and people with disabilities and youth, yes. And then the third one is Jabeni, the minister in the presidency, which was originally established under President Zuma's admin, and they called it the monitoring. It was supposed to monitor what the performance of other government departments. But now who monitors the monitor?
Exactly.
You understand? So that's also a gap, because if we had a portfolio committee in parliament that checks the performance of the presidency as a whole, we would be sitting with a situation whereby we hold President Ramaphosa or whichever president accountable to say, sir, last year you promised these 9 points. Can we check if we have achieved them? Because we are starting a new calendar year. And it could have been a very good opportunity. We are going to start the government financial year starts now on the 1st of April. It's the beginning of the government financial year. And that portfolio committee has not been established. We are again waiting to be a reactive nation. Like we are reacting with the Madlangas as well as the Ad Hoc Committee. We are reacting. when we could have used the resources we had that time to prevent what transpired.
Two interesting surveys came out this week. The world's most stressful cities were revealed, with a list highlighting the top 10 places where your experience is most likely to feel taxing. The new study has revealed how crime levels, air pollution, congestion, and climate factors combine to impact day-to-day well-being. Cape Town ranks as the most stressful city, driven by a high crime index, heavy congestion at 36%, and high average humidity. Crime is rife in the city, particularly in the CBD and the Cape Flats. Jozi is third when it comes to the stress index.
So two South African major cities are one in three on the top 10.
Top 10 most stressful cities to live in. At number 10 was Naples, followed by Athens, Mexico City, Kuala Lumpur, Jakarta, Sao Paulo, Zurich, Johannesburg, Delhi, and Cape Town.
I'm surprised that Zurich is there. I'm not surprised that Mexico City is there.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Sao Paulo. Did you say Sao Paulo is
there? Sao Paulo, yes.
It is there. Ah, okay. But look, I'm surprised Cape Town is actually leading the pack. With the violence, I understand. With the traffic, I definitely know that the traffic in Cape Town is hell.
Yes.
And the violence because of the Cape Flats violence. But generally, there is violence in the Western Cape. Mm. The city of Cape Town with the surrounding townships, there's a lot of murders that are happening there, robberies. And
there's been a lot of... what is it called? Like a mass shooting.
Yes, there's mass shooting.
It's actually the Wild West right now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's said that the world's most beautiful city is also the world's most stressful city.
Is that not why they want to build this curtain? Sorry, this wall.
You know, I don't know if the wall that the city of Cape Town intends, and last week they actually advanced the plans, intends to build to can actually separate. In my language, the poor and the rich, because that's what is intended.
That's what I'm thinking. Nothing can curtain, so that the guests can't see behind the curtain and see the squalor and the poverty.
Their motivation for doing it is to say to cordon that place and close those people up,
like they did Gaza.
Like they did in Gaza, but I don't think it will solve the issue of violence and what do you call it, theft and robberies. Because who said, if they are alleging and assuming that the people in those squatter camps, areas they want to cordon, are the ones causing crime in the city of Cape Town, who said if there's a wall, they can't go out wherever the gate is
exactly
to go and commit those criminal activities?
And also, then, if I live behind the wall, I think I don't deserve to be protected from the very same people.
Exactly. You understand?
So now I'm stuck with the people. I can't even run.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because you put a stop nonsense.
You put a stop nonsense there. And I, on a serious note, I don't think South Africa, after the segregation we went through as a nation, now we want to put a wall between poverty-stricken people and rich people. As you said, Fresh, because we want to put a veil, a curtain that will hide the squalor that is very visible in the eyes of the tourists. And you know what is another cause of this? Is the so-called investors. People who come with foreign currency like dollars and euros to come and invest and or buy property in the city of Cape Town. And when they do that, they raise prices that ordinary South Africans can afford to be there. Secondly, they want to be isolated. We love Cape Town. We want to live here, but we don't want to be to when I'm on my balcony.
I don't want to see the riffraff. I don't see the riffraff.
I don't know. And I think that's where the pressure is coming from.
Yes.
But I think the national government must not allow that. Look, it is the competence and the responsibility of a metro like Cape Town, followed by the province. And I think that's where it should be stopped. Because for me, it's even fueling the Cape Zit thing, this thing of Cape, independent Cape Town.
Yeah, but that's the plan. I think the ultimate plan is exactly that.
Yes. And we shouldn't allow it as a nation.
No, we must refuse.
I mean, that's...
Just like we must refuse that all of a sudden you want to cordon off people.
Yeah, exactly.
We've seen this before.
And it's happening and we are quiet about it. You know, the nation is relaxed. And when the wall is up, we'll be saying, hey, but why did we separate people like that?
Exactly.
And when the wall is already up. And
then we want to call it peaceful coexistence.
Yeah. You know, there's something happened that's very disturbing. A colleague of mine who works for the Department of Public Works, showed me a note. You know what? The Department of, not Public Works, Labor. You know, Labor is the custodian of workplace environment on how you should treat your...
Yes.
They are renovating the building inside. There's workmen happening. So they close the main door.
Okay.
And the employees are entering through back doors and all that. So the main entrance at Labor, because when I ask what's going on, please enter. But they used to the back door. And I said, but how do you guys work when there's construction happening in the building? You know, I'm raising this because I'm thinking the Department of Labor is supposed to be the custodian of a good work environment. And because should they come to your house or your offices, or and you are doing the same, they will lock the offices up because you are endangering the employees. Exactly. And these are the things that are happening in front of our eyes. And we are seeing nothing about them.
Absolutely. Another interesting study that came out was from Transparency International. They released the 2025 Corruption Perceptions Index. South Africa is stuck at a score of 41, below the global average, while countries like Botswana and Rwanda are scoring high in the 50s and 60s. South Africa has not moved. Seychelles is at 68, Cabo Verde 62.
Cabo Verde?
Yeah, 62.
I can't believe that.
Botswana 58, Rwanda 58. The USA are at 64. Although I feel based on what we've seen so far, I'm keen to see what the US will score by next year this time.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing not corrupt
about
that government.
There's nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. And
the UK is at 70, France is at 66.
Who's running this?
Transparency.org.
Oh, the Transparency
International, yes.
Oh, it's Transparency International. I don't understand how do they score the European countries that high. I'm actually shocked that Botswana is only at 50-something. I had expected them to be in their 60s and
70s. Lesotho is at 99.
No, how fresh? There's zero corruption in Lesotho. Is that what we are saying?
It's corruption perception. Perception.
Wait. The higher you score, it means what? You are less corrupt.
Is my understanding.
There's no way.
No, it's the other way around.
The other way around.
Yes. I apologize. So, for instance, Denmark is 1. Finland is 2.
Yeah.
No, man. Sorry.
Those are the numbers. The one is Denmark. It might be number one in the
world.
Those
are the rankings.
Yes.
So, yeah, South Africa could have scored 41 alongside Vietnam, Bulgaria, Trinidad, Moldova. Ghana is 43, China 43, and so on. It goes up. Botswana 58.
And that's not the listing, that's the score, that's the percentage.
Yes, the ranking 41st. So Botswana ranked 41st with Qatar, Rwanda, and Slovenia. Saudi Arabia scored a 57.
Yeah, no.
And so it goes.
Transparency International, I don't believe those figures. Yeah, I don't.
But these are perceptions anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
But they're saying that there has not been any movement in terms of corruption. I'm keen to see what they score South Africa after Madlanga Commission
yes.
and the ad hoc committee.
Yeah.
Koparlamenti.
The 2027 perception ratings will actually give us a guideline if there's been an impact made by this commission and the ad hoc committee.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's move to Paul O'Sullivan.
Yes.
Who on earth is Paul O'Sullivan, 1? 2, is he qualified for what he claims he's good at? And 3, why did you have a fight with Paul O'Sullivan?
Which one should I start with?
Why did you fight with Paul O'Sullivan?
It was so bad fresh. And only now, when I hear the stories of other people, I realize how this guy... is bad news. I was a resident analyst on ANN 7 for quite a number of years, from about 2013, 2014. And obviously, the ANN 7 was seen as the Gupta's channel close to Zuma. So everybody who was anti-Jacob Zuma would criticize or hate people who were at ANN, including normal employees.
Hey, in fact, Praveen Gordhan called you a Gupta analyst.
It was during that time, actually, when Praveen Gordhan, the late minister, called me a Gupta analyst. During that time when Paul O'Sullivan threatened me. You know, he actually, I was reminding Andile Ngcutabo and Sindisiwe Mabi, the former anchor of the news that last night, that, hey guys, do you recall that Paul O'Sullivan once threatened me? And he even came to the studios in Midrand with two guys who were purported to be policemen to either intimidate me or harass me. I never got encountered with them because we were on air or on set.
Yes.
And then we heard after that Paul O'Sullivan was there to arrest me with two policemen or people claiming to be policemen. But the security guards didn't allow them through. And what basically happened was, when we were doing the scoops, and I do a lot of research to do analysis. I read, I ask people for information, whether it's in or outside the country. When the stories of Paul O'Sullivan started popping up, and this guy was being called a forensic expert, an intelligence operative, and all those things, I asked the guys I used to work with at Delco or DFA that time, and colleagues in government, but who's this guy? Where does he come from? And he's of Irish origin, and he's got a British passport and a South African passport. Then I decided, on my own, let me go and find out who is Paul O'Sullivan. And I engage with our representative in the UK.
Okay.
I won't mention the person and the time.
And then they ran
to run the background of Paul O'Sullivan, and I got that report. And I shared it with people at the now called SSA. It was called NIA at the time.
Yes.
To say, hey, but this guy, I was overstepping because I'm no longer a diplomat. I'm no longer in a government position to can do that. So I overstepped. Then I gave the report to say, I found this thing about this guy. Then somebody must have tipped him or leaked the information to him to say, there's a guy called Botsamwila who's investigating you, and he has shared the report to the leaders at the farm. I don't know what did they do with that report. And he went for me, whether it was on the media or for what. And, you know, I wonder why he didn't get me arrested, because I threatened him at that time to say, I don't negotiate with colonial settlers, especially those of British origin. I come from the upper background.
Yes.
People like him, we put bullets in their necks. And he stopped. He stops. It went silent. And recently, when Paul O'Sullivan started popping up with things that I talked and wrote about 7-8 years back.
Yes.
I said the things about, and they're coming out to be true now. You understand? They are coming out to say, but this guy who claimed to be a forensic expert, he claims actually again, and I saw it in the other committee during the course of this week, he claims to have been in the British or the English military intelligence. You know, Fresh, I don't know if our people's...
Is there evidence of such?
There is no evidence of such. Let me tell you what my findings...
That's how good a spy he was.
There's no evidence. Let me tell you what was happening.
Yes, sir.
There is a national service in the British Army or forces. And it's, yes, 40, 50 years back. Every one of them had to go through the national service in the army. And maybe it happened to be when you are in the army for that 1 year or 2 years of service, you will be put in that intelligence unit, because some may go to engineering, some intelligence, some what.
Yes.
And he has been in the army because he had to serve the service. That's one. And that was it. When Paul O'Sullivan left the British Army service, like any other national there, he settled in his home country, or his another birth country of Ireland, of which the northern part of Ireland, it was still the fight between Sinn Féin, the political party. It was very close to the ANC and the PAC in exile.
Okay.
So they were fighting for the liberation of Ireland, the northern part of Ireland. And Sinn Féin had a military wing, which actually some of Abla and Umkhonto-we-Sizwe forces trained with them. Okay, the IRA, Irish Republican Army. And Paul O'Sullivan sits here and claims that when he was in Ireland, he was actually spying on the Sinn Féin and the IRA. And therefore, after he grew up and he realized that apartheid is a bad thing, he decided to come and settle in South Africa. And he applied for citizenship here. He applied in the late 80s, 88 or 89.
Okay.
He only got his permanent residence permit in the post-South Africa, 1993, 94. Then in 1997, he got his citizenship. And those were some of the things that had concerned me, being a consular official to say, how did a person like Paul O'Sullivan get his citizenship? Did he get it prior or before? So I made it my business to go and investigate him.
Sure.
But along those lines, then I discovered that when he came to South Africa, or post-1994, he wanted to be in the National Intelligence Agency of South Africa, probably to be a double agent or a double spy and all those things, whatever you call them. And you know what kept us safe at that time? The turf war between the Afrikaners in South Africa, the so-called Boers, and the English people. So they kept him out. That's the only thing that saved us from Paul O'Sullivan being in the National Intelligence Agency or SSA today. Because the Afrikaner people who were dominant in SSA, they kept him out.
Mm.
So he resorted to go and infiltrate the police intelligence. That's why the IP, South African Police Service, and so forth. And when he was rejected by a National Intelligence Agency, he went to the police.
Mm.
Due to maladministration, corruption, and inefficiencies in South African Police Service, Paul O'Sullivan, and he's an English, British speaker, and Irish, rose above without any qualification or anything. To an extent that at some stage, he became actually when he threatened me, he was working, claiming to be working for IPED and AXA. Mm. He was employed by AXA without qualifications, without anything. That's where white supremacy and white privilege have allowed a person like Paul O'Sullivan to can be a head and executive of AXA Security. That man was in charge of all security of all 9 airports of the country. Now you can imagine what could he have brought in and out of the country or allowed in and out of the country. And then he also confirmed that he is a member of AfriForum. You see, that's another thing. You are claiming to be anti-apartheid activists. You love South Africa. You hate corruption and crime. But you belong to AfriForum, a right-wing organization that is very racist or pro-African culture. And guess what? He says, he claims, there's another claim, that he was recruited or recommended to join AfriForum. Recommended is the correct word. By guess who? Dr. Mamphele Ramphele. Where does that come from? Why would Dr. Mamphele Ramphele recommend Paul O'Sullivan not to join her then political party or any other political party she belonged to, including the Democratic Alliance, then to say go and join AfriForum if you want to fight corruption in South Africa? But I want to see what's going to come out of his allegations. He implicated the former police commissioner, George Fivers. He implicated President Mbeki. He implicated President Zuma.
But then Fivers, in one interview, say he doesn't know this guy.
Yes, he says, I don't know this guy. He's claiming. Fivers came out. But I want to see what President Mbeki and President Zuma are going to say about these allegations that Paul O'Sullivan is
fighting Khampepe there. You think they'll have time for this other one?
Look, they have to come up with something. They can't keep quiet. This Khampepe thing is also getting tight. But yeah, long and short for South Africans or for the people who don't know, Paul O'Sullivan is an Irish-British, rejected British citizen. That's why he's anti-England now. He's an Irish resident. He's given 3 passports and he's a South African, declared South African citizen. So he's a citizen of 3 countries.
Mm.
And that's some of the challenges we are faced with, that to have a very racist, misleading, lying man with 0 qualifications, and he has managed to occupy, and I'm saying 0 because even those that he claimed to be with, he refuses to submit his CV. I saw Mr. Julius Malema of the Economic Freedom Fighters questioning him about what he had said on Wednesday, on Tuesday, and on they went to check the qualification that he's got A or O levels, and he studied some engineering, a technical college in England that does not exist. And this is the man who was at the high end of our security cluster.
Yes.
And we allowed it as a nation. And if any member of the then National Party, the current ANC and the GNU can sit here and try and defend that Paul O'Sullivan had infiltrated our security cluster, then we will be lying to ourselves, because that's exactly what he has done. You know, he has infiltrated our security cluster from top to bottom. And you see what's the problem, Fresh? Now people are going to start hating and swearing at Paul O'Sullivan and saying the government is infiltrated because it is. The damage is done. It is in the public arena. But when the government were warned, or you know, you don't have to like the Bhutans of this world when they want you in government. You don't have to like it to believe me. But if I say to a minister or a DG or a director in government to say, hey, check, there's a problem here. I am doing that as a point of national interest without wanting to benefit anything. As a resident and a citizen of this country, if I go to a police commission, say, police commission, I think there's a drug lab somewhere in Centurion or Midrand. Just listen and try and test and see if there's a drug lab there and come back and say, no, we didn't find anything, or get us more information. Unlike shelving things on the side. But people who behave like that is people who are infiltrated or captured. And we have seen what is capturing through Paul O'Sullivan.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's move to SIU boss, now former SIU boss, now NPA boss, reversing decisions. What's going on there?
The advocate, what is his name, by the way? You know, it was just 1 week fresh. You will recall that late last year, on the third quarter of last year, the SIU secured a court order in investigating maladministration and corruption, especially with the Tembisa hospital issue. Not the Cat Matlala part, but there's allegations of Mr. Ongani Maumela to be involved in some corrupt activities with government tenders and all that. The SIU secured a court order to can confiscate, is it the right word, his assets and assets linked to his monies. And one of the links, it's a supercar, high-end vehicle shop in, what do you call it, in Emalahleni, in Witbank.
Yes.
They confiscated those assets. At that time, I asked myself a question, why confiscate an asset without having a warrant of arrest and to charge that person? You are still investigating. Fine. They say they didn't want, when the charge and the arrest come, the person may have disposed the assets or the vehicles, which are high-end vehicles, the Porsches, the Ferraris, and so forth. They confiscated them. The current director of National Director of Public Prosecutions, the NPA,
and Mutibi.
Advocate Mutibi.
Yes.
He was the SIU head at the time when these things happened. So it was under his watch.
Okay.
1 week fresh. 1 week he's at the NPA because President Ramaphosa, you remember, appointed him without any process, any interview. Yes, he can do that. But the country embarked on a process to recruit the NDPP. Because Advocate Shabila Batoyi Tembe had come to an end, end of January. Now, since last year, October, November, there was a committee or recruitment policy led by Minister Mamoloko Kubayi of Justice to recruit the new National Director of Public Prosecutions. Recommendations were made to the president right at the end. Out of six names, three. The president said, I'm not going to appoint any of these people that you have embarked on recruiting them. I'm going to move or appoint Advocate Mutibi from SIU to NPA. 1 week in office, orders came. We don't know from who. Maybe from justice, maybe from courts, maybe from the president, maybe from advocate. Advocate Mutibi issues a directive that all assets of Mr. Ongani Maumela, that he, when he was on the other side, had instructed that they should be confiscated, they must be returned to the person. Yes, I heard Ntate Kanyago, the spokesperson of the NPA, saying, of the SIU, it is not all lost and gloom, because one of the orders they received is that in order to return those vehicles, they must give fixed property or what do you call it? Or fixed property or money to the value of those vehicles. So that is the story that is very amazing, fresh, that, you know, 3 months you say confiscate assets, now you occupy a different portfolio, return everything to the gentleman, let them give us security in a bond or money or fixed assets. Very amazing. But I found it very weird that the two very important government entities, the SIU and the NPA, which are at the helm of the justice process are conducting themselves in this manner.
So,
and I'm questioning it. The country is very quiet. It looks normal for people for that to happen. Like I said at the beginning, why, if there is no pending charges against a person,
yes,
we haven't heard of any pending charges against Mr. Momela, why did they take his goods? Now they are returning them with a guarantee of cash. And look, we're not talking cheap stuff here. If they've taken 50 vehicles that are worth 4 million each. So you can imagine the length and the depth of this case or the allegations of corruption. And again, his name has been mentioned several times in the Madanga Commission as well. So we are going to be seeing the intertwining of this, you know, justice system and corruption coming out. But I can't believe that public officials are still conducting themselves in this manner when there's inquiries. You know, it's the same as the Palapala saga that is sitting in front of the Constitutional Court. You know, the EFF last week, they marched to the Constitutional Court for them to release, what do you call this thing? The judgment regarding the Palapala investigation. Again, Chief Justice Meyer said they will release it very soon. Yeah, but that's the challenge we are faced with the SIU and the NPA. For me, it is a challenge. It's raising eyebrows.
I remember there was a story Mini Dlamini over December.
Yes, yes.
The SIU, Bari, Mini has agreed, has been cooperating.
Yes, yes.
To retain 50,000.
Yes.
That was not nicely acquired.
Yeah.
And I remember she released a statement.
Yes, after.
And you know, I watched that story and we're in a WhatsApp group together.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I said that, not for me, I don't know if I agree with how the SIU rode on that story
or that
issue.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. And maybe because it's, you know, the one with the neck that sticks out the most was the first one to get the chop. But that case is about someone who acquired money from the lotteries commission.
Yes.
And did an event. So Mini was a service provider with a whole bunch of other people.
Yeah.
Someone I personally know did the sound for that event. He was hired to do the sound for that event. And then there were other influencers and other people who were hired for said event. So,
and they went for Mini.
So I found it wild that they've targeted one person to say, you know, the money they acquired, they were not meant to acquire because they are lottery.
They actually even said she had agreed to pay it back or something like that.
She cooperated or something weird, funny like that. And now for me, I found it unfortunate that why are you targeting one person? When the person you should be targeting is the one who went and said, "Rukupa chelete."
Yes.
And then if you're going to go for one service provider,
what about all others?
Go for the entire value chain.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the entire value chain benefited. The people who did sound, people who did catering, all of them were remunerated.
Yeah, and go and you target a person with 50,000 vis-a-vis how much did the organizer get from the lottery?
For the entire event.
For the entire event. And, exactly. And it's unfortunate. And you know, this is one thing that, look, I sometimes feel very sad for the artists like you who are doing business with government.
Yes.
In some instances, I've been in government and I've worked with a lot of artists. People will expect artists to do things for free.
Yeah.
As if it's not a job
exactly.
for them, as if not their bread and butter. And it's a lack of understanding, actually, that when you see a disc jockey fresh spinning things, or somebody singing, or somebody dancing, or cracking a joke, and you think they must do it for free, while it is actually their bread and butter. But this is where Minister Gaetan McKenzie and his department, they must up their game in protecting and advancing the interests of the artists. We will stop having artists who die in poverty, you understand? And some, they can't even afford their own funerals because we are not taking care of our own artists who are keeping us glued on our televisions and radios. People will start saying, "I'm protecting you," but I know you hardly do business with government.
No, I mean, I've done business with government. I'm just hoping that no one was there trying to eat on the side. Because then that's how you get covered in blood. You had no idea it was someone else's blood. Yeah. What do you think is going to happen, Advocate Motibi, when it comes to retirement age in 2 years? Are you thinking, or maybe number one, figured, I'd rather get 2 good years out of him before I retire? Or is there a way of wrangling that he serves his full term?
I don't think, look, if the president is going to keep until he serves full term, which will be, he's supposed to retire at 65, I assume he's 63, there's no law and policy that says you can do that. You can't work and be on a payroll after the age of 65, except in exceptional cases like judges and you know, other posts.
Members of parliament.
MPs. And those are not employments, as if you look at them. They are not subject to the Labor Relations Act. But I think President Ramaphosa has left with 3 years in the office. And you see, this is where you muscle your political power. President Ramaphosa is left with 3 years in office. And if you take this gentleman to serve 2 years, who is your trusted lieutenant when it comes to legal as well as judicial issues? It's clear that he trusts Advocate Ntimi. But also President Ramaphosa is also facing allegations of, one, corruption with regard to the Palapala thing, two, the CR-17 sealed file. So he's got matters hanging and pending. So he will have to rely on what some of the judges he appoints. Secondly, people like Advocate Mutibi to can hang in there those files until I'm out of the office. But I think he is going to go on retirement, and they will bring an acting person, either his deputy, who will be the deputy at that particular time, probably when 2028, I think they will bring an acting person, either his deputy or somebody from outside. But I don't see him staying in that position beyond his age of retirement. And like you said, I think the president was saying, let me take the best, you know, out of this gentleman, because he's got a very good proven track record his last 2 years. But again, Fresh, you know, too much changes at the head of the organization, it causes a lot of instability. What would have been wrong if Mr. Mutibi would have stayed at the SIU to finish his retirement term there and appoint a brand new public, what do you call it, National Director of Public Prosecution from the recommended team that the recommended, you know, candidates that went through the processes? Then you don't have people questioning, why are you putting Advocate Mutibi there? You understand? I think the president should have done it that way. They had a clean process running parallel, even if there were oppositions from, for example, the Democratic Alliance towards other candidates. But they ran a clean process as prescribed. Why do you depart from the prescribed process to go and appoint a person? And I'm not taking anything away from Advocate Mutibi. I've already said he's seasoned, he's well decorated in his field. But why do you want to appoint a person for 3 years? Don't we have other legal brains that you could have entrusted the stabilization of the NPA with? And yeah, but I think he's going to let him go. I think he's going to retire when that age comes. They retire nice. You know, they retire with all their pensions and benefits. That's one of the key positions. Like Jamila Matoi is set for life.
So even if you haven't served a third of your term?
I think he was the National Director of Public Prosecution. You remember, look at President Motlanthe.
Yes.
You understand? Well, how long did President Motlanthe say? Less than 8 months as a president. But he was the president of the republic.
And now he has protection for life.
For life. Benefits and protection. That's the fortunate or unfortunate part.
In fact, I was at an event at UJ. They were inducting the first years.
Okay.
Mama Phumzile Mlambongcuka was there. I guess she's the chancellor.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, go UJ. So that, she was there. And it was dope to see her security detail. And I'm like, oh, yes, can I? She's stuck with them for life now.
Yes. and despite having been the deputy president of the republic, she also served as an in the United Nations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Let's talk about another Madlanga implicated, now dead.
Yeah.
This gent was mentioned as one of the people that tortured and allegedly tortured and killed Ntate Mbense.
Yes.
And then Witness D obviously then was taken out. Now there was a gent who claimed he was shot at.
Yes.
And he hid under his bike.
Last week, Tuesday.
And now my understanding is, if you're hiding under a bike, you're probably sitting duck.
You are actually at a more compromised position being under a bike.
That's what I'm thinking.
Be killed. Yeah.
And then Jigi, a day later, we're told that he committed suicide in front of his girlfriend, who is a sergeant, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he's a sergeant in the SAPS. And she's her name has also been mentioned.
Has also involved.
In the Madlanga community, in the witness this statement, her name is allegedly involved. But, Fresh, you know, if you recall, last week when we ended the show, I made a statement and a comment that can these Madlanga prosecutions and charges happen very fast before these people either commit suicide or kill each other, then we won't have witnesses. You know, I made that statement that was Saturday.
Yes.
Saturday night, this gentleman committed suicide. I felt so bad, you know, that why did I say that, actually? What made me think people will commit suicide?
No, but you're a commentator. Just comment.
Yes, it does commentary, you know, in passing. And I don't know, this may be psychological. If you look at last week's episode, I was a bit hesitant to believe that there was an attempt on his life. And I said, if there was an attempt on his life with rifles and guns and 17 shells were found, they would have not missed him, these people. They are former cops, they are security personnel, and they are hardened criminals. Not him, I mean those who tried to kill him, they would have not missed. And then he goes Saturday evening to in a filling station, sitting in the car with the girlfriend. And the evidence that comes out of witnesses who were there, especially filling station workers, they are saying there was an argument before in the car. And he pulled his pistol and he shot himself. Thanks God he didn't shoot the lady was with or the partner. And yeah, but again, it tells the in-depth of, you know, what these people who are alleged to have been committing crimes, it's involved with. So out of the 12 people who are allegedly were involved in the murder of Ntate Emmanuel Mbenze, out of the 12, 4 are dead now by various reasons, whether it's suicide, whether they were killed, and all that. And the key one being the person who spilled the beans, you know, who was witnessed in the Madlanga Commission. That was a very key witness who was murdered after. Now it makes people to wonder and worry, Fresh. Will those that are remaining to go and testify at Madlanga Commission, will the people be comfortable to do that? But it also, because this is suicide, it also tells of the psychological and emotional pressure that these people are going through.
Yes.
You understand? Because it says also to me, it's not only about Emmanuel Mbenze. It says to me there's other elements involved. There's stories and allegations that they've been in battle with the drug dealers, they've been in battle with the so-called Zamazamas or artisanal miners. It could be any of those pressures that will result a person to sit down and say, I don't have life. I'm dead anyway. Let me take off my life. And so there's so much pressure coming out of the things that have happened in Ekurhuleni. I looked at the, I didn't look, I read some comments regarding the IPIT, report. The Investigation Police Independent Directorate that investigate police conduct, ne? For Ekurhuleni, you know, part of the something that has come out of that report that I saw the witness who was at the Madlanga Commission this week is an IP director. One of the statements he said is that a whole lot of Ekurhuleni law enforcers, officials of the municipality, including political office bearers, which will mean to me councillors or MMCs, whatever, they're involved in drug trafficking. It's not me saying it, it's the IPIT, you know, testimony at Madlanga Commission that happened during this week. And that's very worrying. And, you know, he went further to say it is not an isolated case with Ekurhuleni municipality.
Yes.
Most metros are involved, or metro officials and police are involved in various crime activities like drug trafficking.
So are they saying they've been compromised?
Yes, stealing of vehicles. You know, all these hideous crimes like drug trafficking, stealing of vehicles or car hijackings. Imagine the police are involved in that. The majority are done by the metro police from either metro of Tshwane and Joburg and Ekurhuleni. I'm mentioning only the Gauteng ones for now. But it is very concerning that IPT has found that its members, or members who are supposed to be law enforcers and protect us, are actually the ones who are at the helm of the crime in the county. And now you start wondering, why did the alleged drug lords and kingpins infiltrate the police? Because it was easy to have blue lights to be escorted. Some, according to this IPT report, some police vehicles are actually, they will pretend as if they have confiscated drugs from a drug dealer or what. Can't they know? They're escorting the drugs with state vehicles. Because once it's escorted by the police, chances of them being robbed or being captured by the true policemen or the clean ones are very rare. That's why there is this turf fight between police. You know, the metros and the South African police service, they are all supposed to be law enforcers. But there's a fight, and there's a turf fight, because they're involved in criminal activities.
Sure.
Yeah.
We are running out of time.
Yes,
but we still have two issues.
Yes.
Did Kat Matlala lie under oath?
According to the newly, what do you call it, exposed or self-exposed girlfriend, in my view and terms, when Mr. Kat Matlala was in the ad hoc committee, he lied. And in which instance, for example, one of the questions that was posed to him at the ad hoc committee was that, are you funding some people of South African police services for favors? That's why most of your cases were either withdrawn, and the old cases, not the current alleged, 18 of them, they were withdrawn. And the courts had said the police didn't do the job properly, the police didn't bring the docket. And Kat Matlala was asked, are you funding or putting money to some of the police officials? And he said, no, he doesn't. He doesn't fund anybody. Now a brigadier who is on a very strategic position at the South African Police Service has come out in the Madlanga Commission and testified that, one, he is the girlfriend of Mr. Matlala, and he was showering him, and there's nothing wrong in showering with this Valentine period your partner or your girlfriend with gifts. You know, I mean, this woman was saying on average she was getting 100,000 rands monthly from Mr. Matlala, sometimes 300,000 rands. And there was misleading and lying under oath, because if your partner, and there's evidence to that they were getting money, even when they tried to pay the money to the girlfriend, whether you call it girlfriend allowance or what, via a third party or a butchery that was owned by one of the friends of the two, the fact of the matter is there was money that came out of Mr. Matlala, whether in cash, whether in a bank account, to this lady, and she confessed. She even said, she went further, I forgot the name of the brigadier, she went further and said, she even had to take, what do you call that tablet that will make me lose my tummy very fast?
Ozempic.
Ozempic. I need a girlfriend in the police who's rich to can buy me Ozempic, not me by himself. I can get rid of my tummy.
No, BBL. But Yamaji, so it mustn't be too much. You know what I mean? Just enough.
Yeah. And this lady, the brigadier, says, oh, by the way, I'm not the only one. And you see, that for me is worrying fresh. When the police brigadier, a brigadier is a senior position, it's the last rank before you become a general, because then it's major general and lieutenant general and a full general. And when a brigadier of the police service, who is not a police woman on the street with a gun, is sitting in a strategic position at headquarters, stands up and says, no, I'm not the only one. He funded me reducing my tummy to look nice, but other police generals and brigadiers, Kat Matlala bought them BBLs or expansion of their bums. Now, fresh, look at how we have stooped to what level that they're supposed to be law enforcers have stooped to. That an alleged kingpin, for whatever reason, whether he's a loving good man who likes to spoil ladies, he buys them artificial bums from taken all over the world. I want to know, men, if there are men involved in the police service, what we already know that General Sibiya got a farm with some antelopes there. What others did they get? How many more police officials, senior police officials, are involved or are benefactors? Let me put it that they're benefactors of criminal proceeds.
So,
how many more of them? I want to see what Mr. Matlala is going to say when he goes to the Matlanga Commission, because he has not been there. And he's one of the witnesses that are lined up to appear before the Matlanga Commission, because there's so much information that has come out now from the Matlanga Commission that didn't come out in the ad hoc committee. For example, the Ekurhuleni now suspended Deputy Chief of Police, General Julius Mkhwanazi,
yes,
has not appeared before the Parliamentary Committee, the ad hoc committee. So it may have been an administrative fault for us to have two processes running, but it's actually helping because it exposes somebody goes lies there, and while on the other end, somebody provides a contradictory evidence.
And it's actually perfect also because, unfortunately, your mind will only accurately remember the truth, not the extent of your lie.
Not the extent of the lie.
So the extent of your lie will trip you up when you have to tell the same lie again.
And that's what we are seeing. That's what we're experiencing, actually.
Yeah.
I want to see how Mr. Matlala, Paul O'Sullivan are going to say and or behave when they are faced with a jurist at the Matlanga Commission. Because there it's not politicians. You know, it's not political parties trying to stand up with glory and protecting this one. No, there is the jury.
And it's not personal, personal.
And it's not personal. Day. Yeah.
Absolutely. MONUSCO.
Yes, sir.
In closing.
Yes.
Why is South Africa saying to the United Nations, it's time to say goodbye? A big deal.
After what, 27 years since 1999, the South African Defense Force has been part of the United Nations what you call peacekeeping force in the DRC. And we have almost 700 plus men and women in boots that we have deployed to the DRC since 1999. And despite that, there's equipment and there's a budget that South Africa, the country, one, the contribution towards the UN peacekeeping, and secondly, the budget to can keep our personnel as well as equipment in the DRC. But the story or the answer to the why is that I think it was an executive decision, and with the complaints from the generals in the army to say the army budget is stretched, we can't afford to maintain our armed forces, and the constraints, you know, fiscal constraints that we are having in the country. I think President Ramaphosa then was compelled as the head of state to pick up the phone and talk to the Secretary General of the United Nations, Mr. Antonio Guterres.
Yes.
To say, sir, it's with sad news that we are withdrawing our forces there, because the reason President Ramaphosa gave is for budgetary constraints.
Legacy of United Nations when it comes to peacekeeping, what do you think it is on the continent?
On the continent is very bad, Fresh. I don't know of any country, actually, I'm trying to think very hard, where the United Nations peacekeeping force has been successful. You look at Sudan, both north and south. You look at Rwanda. Actually, to this day, some people, they still blame the United Nations forces that were in Rwanda, especially led by the French and the Belgians, for what transpired in Rwanda, because this happened when the blue berets... Yes, they were lucky. Yeah. Exactly. And you look at CAR, you know, the Central African Republic, and the DRC has one of the longest or oldest wars in the continent. And I don't think the United Nations peacekeeping force is doing very well. Remember, the United Nations exists actually for peace and security. That's why they... But how do you keep peace and security with rifles and you are faced with rebels? And countries that fund you as the UN, like the United States, for an example, are the same countries that are perpetuating conflicts or funding rebels or arming a certain group over a certain one. You understand? So it's very difficult for the United Nations to cope in such. But it was a very big burden for us as South Africa to continue to be in MONUSCO. It's very expensive to keep personnel abroad. You know, some of these people have families, and you have to maintain their living condition and standards in any country where they are. And I sadly, it may compromise the security, the little security that the United Nations has given to the DRC. But charity begins at home. South Africa needs more money and security, domestically as well as within the borderline of South Africa.
Looking at, for instance, MONUSCO and the fact that KIE, it's literally almost falling apart. or when you look at whether it's been effective or not, the efficacy at ding.
Yeah.
A lot of people are arguing that why is the UN not having boots on the ground in Gaza, for instance?
Yes.
To be the ones that are peacekeepers and be the ones who are making sure that aid gets to people who need aid.
And people are settled well.
So do you think when it comes to conflict resolution, when it comes to standing up against superpower aggression, that the UN has been effective?
It's ineffective and they're biased. And like I said earlier, I think they are influenced by the contribution.
Are they biased or are they just toothless? Because they will call out America, they will call out Israel, they will call out Russia, but there's nothing more they can do.
I'm using the word bias because they've called out every other country where the leaders, they've called out Zimbabwe and others, where the leaders are, you know, pushing atrocities against the citizens or, you know, where there's conflict. But then on top of that, they will add by making sure there's a peacekeeping force.
Yes.
And I've mentioned a few African countries. They've done it in Asia. They understand. But why, as you correctly say, I'm saying they are biased because why are they not sending the United Nations peacekeeping force in Palestine? And somebody may argue that because it is not the government of Palestine killing its people or conflict between the two groups there. It doesn't matter. People are being killed by some armed force. Why are we not having... And you are even saying it correctly, not to fight Israel or anybody, but to protect the people and to make sure that aid, when food comes in there and water and aid, it's protected and it reaches its destination.
Absolutely.
And that's what the United Nations are supposed to be doing. They're not doing that. And that's why I'm saying they are biased. Because why in other areas? What is of their interest to have forces in the DRC and South Sudan and they're not having the same forces in Gaza? Understand? What is it that they want to achieve? Is it not peace and security?
Yes.
Peace and security have formed the fundamental basis of the United Nations organization when it was formed. And if they want, why not peace and security in the Middle East, especially in Palestine? So that's why I'm saying they're biased.
So we focus on the poly.
Yeah.
But I can let go who Harona Nyoku.
Yeah, no, they have a serious problem now. I saw a memo from Guterres to President Trump to say they must indicate how and when are they intending to pay
the balance,
the debt, yes. Because now it's the United States is out of WHO, and they have a debt. I mean, one, they've lost big because they were the biggest contributor. Secondly, they owe the WHO. And again, how do we arrive at that? What kind of accounting system do we have where a member state that is donating to an organization like WHO still has a debt? What debt?
But how are you going to collect the money? It's not like de Villiers can go in there and collect it for you.
No, President Trump must just do the honorable thing and pay WHO. He has left, it's fine, but let the US pay their debt.
Yeah, but you can't say honorable and Trump in the same sentence. We say.
Fresh. He's still the president of the United States. He has been quiet for
one
week. We haven't had trouble in the world. Let's hope this will last
Anna
few more
ona.
Months.
Anna ona.
Yeah.
But anyway, we don't have time.
Yes, my
brother. So we are out of here.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot.
Where do we find you on social media?
Both as usual, botsangm@gmail.com and 083-884-7787 on WhatsApp and @botsangm on social media, all handles.
Thank you for being a part of another episode of Wow, What a Week! #Politrix with Fresh and Botsang. Coming to you from Discover TV in Four Ways, Johannesburg, let them be your stage. Shout out to Keletso Modisa King. She is our executive producer. Trevor Zondi and his team at Pezulu Works. And of course, you for being a part of our works, for watching, for contributing, for debating in the comment section, for liking, for subscribing even. Get more of your people. Bring your tribe. Let's all be one big tribe. Until next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We are out of here.